Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, a seemingly innocent child shows up on an unsuspecting homeowner's doorstep. The only thing strange about the encounter is that the child's eyes are pitch black.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And of course, if you like the show, help keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person, as we call them, EPP. Sign up over at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. With that, you get access to quite literally the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories ever created. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours of ghost stories for you to binge away on, as well as our bonus EPP episodes, brand new ones every single week, jam-packed with our best ghost stories, our ebook, our audiobook. That's all there for you. It's only $5 a month, keeps us on the air, and you get all that in exchange. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to get in on all of that. Tony and Todd joining you on today's episode. What's going on in your world, Todd?
I just got done. I like to get in the mood, so I turn down the lights in my studio. Mm-hmm. I light a couple of candles, and then I grab a flashlight and put it under my chin just so I'm ready to go and spend some time with you talking ghosts.
Well, that's good. That's completely normal. That's show prep here in 2021.
Listen, it worked years ago, like 20, 30, 50 years ago. That was always the scary thing to do. In 2021, it's still scary to put a flashlight under your chin.
I always preferred having the studios really dark. I always liked that. I would try and turn the lights down as much as I could. And it was kind of creepy sometimes because you'd walk into a studio and the lights would be out. And that back in some of those days, people would still be smoking in the studios, particularly in Green Bay.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, there was like the ceilings were stained with cigarette smoke, but you'd walk in there and it's like, oh my God, what the hell's going on in here? Oh, it's a radio station. Yes, this is good times. But the darkness, I don't know what it is. I think we all just kind of, so many of us radio people are kind of like mushrooms. We just kind of, not that we do mushrooms, we're like mushrooms. We do better in the dark, although some of them do mushrooms too. But
yeah, clarify yourself on that. I think for me, like, especially when I was working overnights and stuff, mm-hmm. it just set the mood like you knew it was dark outside. Mm-hmm. You knew that was the time of day. Turning down the lights, maybe you had a couple of spotlights in the studio just so you could see where the equipment was, and that was it.
Yeah. Did you ever fall asleep in the studio?
Here's the truth. First radio station I ever worked at, I was on overnights. Mm-hmm. There was a clock radio in the studio that we used to tell time for going on the air and stuff. And I was on from 9 at night till 5 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it was hell. And so about 2 o'clock in the morning, I would let the automation roll and I'd set it for every half hour and do a break. So, yeah, I have fallen asleep in the studio.
This is a studio, and this would have been Radio Road.
Yes.
Okay. So this is a studio, and you got to share a story or two of this place. And I never worked there personally because they had moved buildings by the time I started working with that company. But I've been to the building because they still owned it for many, many years. And this is a studio in the middle of a cornfield it's in a town called Ripon, Wisconsin, outside of Ripon. And it's just it's like the perfect setting for an investigation discovery murder series or something. Where it's like, and then one night, they came to the station and everyone was dead.
Right.
It's this kind of labyrinth of a building that had been built onto by many a times. And it's creepy there during the day. But what was it like in the middle of the night? Did you ever have anything where, not even necessarily ghostly, but just kind of some of the locals showing up maybe?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you really were out in the middle of nowhere. There was a huge parking lot, and every once in a while you'd be working and you'd hear some noise and you realize people were out front doing donuts in the gravel parking lot out there or something. One of the scary things was one of the guys that worked at the radio station, he was kind of the late night, early morning guy. So I was out there all by myself. This guy would show up to do the morning show.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of talked like this, and we called him the Axeman of anything because he just seems like somebody who would show up and murder somebody and then take off. So mm-hmm. I think the staff was the scariest part. However, I will tell you that I was working out there alone when the axe murder of Rippon happened. Nope. Naomi Ware was killed with an axe, and I was on call that night to do news when she was murdered. So it was, that was kind of a freaky time.
So no one knew like where, who this guy was or where he was. And, but you were just kind of out there then and waiting and reporting.
Well, they knew, they found out who did it.
Okay.
And so, but it literally was this axe murder where a woman and her husband killed like their mom or something like that. And she was murdered. And it wasn't that far from the radio station where it happened. So, you know, I always talk about how these small towns, they seem quaint.
Yeah.
They have their Lions picnics in the summer, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, there's all these weird little stories to find out about. I love looking into those.
There is. There's so many of them. I had some treasures from Radio Road. Years ago, I was in there and I asked, can I take all the 45s that were in the basement?
Oh my God. Do you still have them?
No, I just got rid of them.
Dang.
I think I have one box left of them, but I had all of them, and they'd been like I'd been moving them from house to house for the last 20 years. And I was just sick of moving them around. they're so damn heavy and there's so many of them. And I finally, I got some record people to look at them. Like, are they worth anything? And I was told, no, they're really not worth much of anything. And I'm like, okay. So I finally gave them to some record collectors around here. And
nice.
It's like, here you go. Enjoy. I'm sick of moving these things around. But no, they were neat, but it was like, what do you do? Some of the sleeves are molding and it was just, you know, the big kind of greenish sleeves. I don't know if green was the original color of the sleeve.
But the weirdest thing about that station was the studio that we were in at the time had a tile floor, you mm-hmm. know, the little tiles that you would have like in schools and yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you'd have to roll across the room on your chair to change these big reels of audio tape.
Yeah.
And at night, all the bugs and the animals would come out and you're out in the middle of a cornfield. So I'd be rolling across the floor and all the way across, I'm crushing all these beetles that are on the floor back and forth and back and forth. It was not the nicest place I ever worked, but I really have fond memories of that place.
It had a lot of character to it. I have the WYUR in carpet that was on the wall.
Oh, yes.
I cut it out. I cut it off the wall because at the time the ceiling had collapsed in that studio.
Right.
And it was just all in disarray. And I thought, I'm just going to take this. So I took a carpet knife and cut it off the wall. I think that's at my parents' house, actually, up in Wisconsin somewhere. But I have the record players, too. I have the two MK2 record players. And it even has the phone number for the meteorologist. And, who was the meteorologist?
Linsmeyer.
He was like a Madison TV meteorologist, I
think. Yep. I think it wasn't it Linsmeyer?
I can look. It's still taped on the record player. I have not removed it. And I actually called it last year just to see who
good
picked
Lord.
Up.
Lord.
And you know what? He fucking picked up the phone. I'm like, oh my God. And I just hung up really quick because I was just curious as to like, who's going to answer this number, you know, 30, 40 years after this was taped to the record player. Still him.
A money making idea really quickly for your mom and dad is to open up a Tony museum for people, fans of the show here, to show up at their house and go through all your old stuff.
Here's the random shit that Tony stole from the radio station. And this is a hit CD with Jams jingles on from 19. There's all sorts of random stuff in those closets. Whenever they come and visit me now, it's just like, and here's another box of things we have from your closets. Like, oh my God. Yeah, good times. Let's go to a ghost story. If that wasn't scary enough, 855-853-4802 is our phone number. First one, it says, I was at a party earlier. I got to go to the beginning. I thought I was at the beginning. Hang on. Let's scroll down a little bit. All right. Starts out. Hi. Glad I found your podcast. It's helped me remember many things I experienced many, many years ago. My first encounter, I'll never forget, even though I did not realize it until later that it was an experience, was when I was around 7 years old. My great-grandfather came into my younger sister in my bedroom. Get the bell ready. Where is the bell? Here's the bell. It says, I was asleep on my top bunk bed. My great-grandfather woke me up around 10:30. It was I was his favorite grandchild. My great-grandfather lived in Wisconsin, and we still lived in Kentucky. Well, he just said he wanted to quickly visit to tell me he loved me and that everything was going to be okay. He kissed me on the forehead and told me to go back to sleep. I told him good night, and I'd see him in the morning. He smiled and said he would see me soon enough. When I got the next morning, I asked my parents where my grandpa Tommy was. My mom just started crying, and she said, honey, I just got off the phone with your grandmother. Her dad, your great-grandfather, passed away last night in his sleep at his home in Wisconsin. It was so unbelievable because I just saw him the night before. Well, I know one day I'll see him soon enough. It's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I now know this sweet experience has opened me up to much more than just seeing family members after they leave this world. A few years later, a few friends of my sister and me stayed over for a slumber party, and of course someone had a Ouija board, as you know, kids between 7 and 10 do not understand the repercussions of messing with something they do not understand. I just remember asking questions, and the planchette would move to yes or no on its own. We started getting scared, so we just put it away. After that, I started having night terrors, seeing shadow figures and scary faces. I'd be paralyzed and unable to even yell for help. All I could do was say the Lord's Prayer in my head over and over repeatedly. I got to where I had every doll and stuffed animal in my room around me as for my protection. As I was tucked in under my covers as tightly as I could get them, this went on for several years. Finally slowed down and stopped altogether after I was baptized as a teenager. I have more stories not associated with either of these two things, and I'll let you know more about them later. Thanks for giving people like me an outlet for what we know is to be the truth, even though most people would not believe me normally back then. Thank you for your time. I'd enjoy if you share my story. Cannot wait to get caught up on your podcast. I can also become an EPP member. Happy Halloween to everyone there. Well, happy post-Halloween to you as well. Interesting, because kids, when they have something that happens like that, it's just completely normal. There's no thought of like, well, grandpa lives half the country away. Why would he be here? He's just there. And you're just accepting of such an idea. And then very shocked the next day when you find out he's not hanging out downstairs.
Did you have a lot of dreams growing up as a kid? Like, were they really vivid?
I would say, yeah. I mean, they seem very normal to me and very vivid. I guess I didn't realize how vivid they were till I kind of started comparing notes with people later in life.
When I was very young, I had some really, really terrible dreams. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would call them nightmares, but I think it was beyond that. I remember, even to this day, and I'm, you know, well into my 50s, I specifically remember being like 4, 5, 6 years old. And some of the dreams I had are just so vivid because they're so real. And I always go back to the point where, how real was it? Was it just mm-hmm. a dream? Or as a child, were we open to other experiences that we aren't? Now that we're adults, you know, how real was that stuff?
It's a good question. And I don't know, like what were some of the ones that you look back on and you kind of have questions about in terms of, was there more to it than just being a dream?
There was a series of dreams that I had. There was always a man in the basement mm-hmm. and the dreams basically, and everybody's afraid of their basements. I get it. But it was a specific dream of me going into the basement. And this man who looked more like a skeleton kind of figure always came after me. And I would just wake up before he'd get me. That was a series of dreams. But I would have really vivid dreams where I had a nightmare. I woke up screaming for my dad. My dad ran into the room. Mm-hmm. But I realized it wasn't my dad. And then I would wake up from that. So it was like a double dream. It really freaky stuff as a kid.
That's bizarre. I mean, I would have something where I would always be drug into the basement as well. And I don't know. And it would be in like different settings too. I'd had one where it was on a house that I lived in until I was about three on Winnebago Drive. Then I had it at the house that I lived on out in the country. But then I'd also like have it the same sort of setting happen at, I'd be like at my aunt's house or something like that. And it was the weirdest feeling that I would get when I was having those dreams. The only way I can like describe it is like, you know, when you're a kid and people are like, you know, oh, look at you. And they're tickling you and they don't stop. And it's just kind of that oversensitive sensation. It just kind of drives you nuts.
Right.
It was like that kind of feeling. And it was just so uncomfortable, but I couldn't get it to stop. And then I'd eventually wake up every time I hit the basement. Never saw what it was, but it was just kind of a reoccurring thing. Didn't you have one that involved vampires?
Oh my God, yes.
And
I don't know how deep you want to go, but for years and years and years, I had dreams about actually being a vampire.
I remember we were driving back from the wedding from hell that we got lost trying to find in northern Wisconsin somewhere one day. And it was like 2 or 3 in the morning and we were driving down a highway and there's this kind of like domed-ish building like next to a farmhouse off the side of the highway. And you told me there was some connection to that building where you in your dreams, the vampires lived or something. I was off of Highway 41. It wasn't far from your house, your childhood home. Anything with those dreams, or do you look back on the vampire ones as being more so just, you know, imagination of childhood?
Well, again, where you talk about like a premonition or seeing something that shouldn't be, one of the dreams that I had, in order to fight off the vampires that I was dealing with, I grabbed 2 crosses on the wall in my mom's room. This was in my dream. I grabbed 2 crosses off my mom's wall. Now, she always had one on her wall, and it was actually for my grandmother's funeral when I was very, very young, and she always had that hanging on her wall. But for some reason, in this dream, there were 2. So I took both off the wall, and I stabbed at the vampires with them.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, about a month after that dream, my grandfather passed away. And so from that moment on, she had 2 crosses on her wall.
That's weird.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So kind of a freaky time. There was a lot of things that kind of ebbed and flowed in reality and dream in my life at that point. So that was one of them.
And I mean, it's one thing like when people have kind of the premonition dreams of death or something, but it's another where it's like involving almost like yours were like the serialized, you know, version of it for like a horror series or something, because it would involve things that would actually happen, but then like really weird supernatural elements to it.
Yeah, I remember one of the dreams, and again, how old am I now? This is 30 some years ago.
Yeah.
Coming home to my parents and saying, okay, we had the town had a meeting. I went to this town meeting about the vampires in town. What were we going to do to fight the vampires? And I got home after the meeting and I was going to tell my family what happened. And my mother and father and my 2 sisters were there, but all of them looked fine except their eyes were dark. There were no whites to their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, prepare yourself, they're coming for you. And they walked out of the house and walked into the cornfields around my family's home. So, I mean, talk about freaky. That freaked me the you know what out.
How often did you watch Salem's Lot?
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies of all time.
I know. Were you watching it heavily at this moment when you were having these?
I don't think so. Okay. I really don't. But I think throughout the years, vampires are something that I've always kind of had an interest in.
Yeah.
And whether or not they're real, that's a whole different conversation. But that obviously tended to sway my dreams a little bit. But yeah, it was pretty freaky.
Yeah, those are you have those are creepy dreams. I just remember you telling me those on that car ride and you freaked me out.
I may have embellished him a little bit that night just to see if you'd pee your pants, you know?
It was great. I think we're listening to like John Garabedian's open house party as we were driving back. And so it's like Real McCoy's on the radio and you're talking about vampires. It was
right.
It was a good night. Driving in your Jeep, I think is what
that's
it was.
That's right.
Yep. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. You'll like this one because it involves the eyes of the people in the story being kind of like that, black-eyed children. It says, I was at a party earlier during this night. My older brother Nicholas drove me home around 2 a.m. I did not have my driver's license at the time because I was only 15. I fell asleep somewhere in the drive home and woke up to see the digital clock in the car having 2 a.m. Hey, Callie, we're here. Nick gently shook me awake. Oh, thanks for driving me home, Nick. I yawned, hopped out of the car. Nick walked me up to the porch and said, Cal, I'm going to go back out of town for a few hours. Mom's dad is at a costume party at the Delaney's house, remember? Nick was way overprotective of me. Yeah, Nick, I remember. I sighed. Well, remember to lock the front door in the back. Be careful when making food, like using a burner. Yeah, I get the drill. I finished his sentence. Okay, just making sure you remember. Nick laughed, which filled me with delight, like an inflated balloon. Finally, when he stopped laughing like a little kid, he playfully socked my arm, and I giggled back at him. Okay, Callie, you be safe and stay in the house. I meant it. Suddenly, Nick got all serious, and his face turned red. He started cracking up. After our final crack-up, he went off to go to town. I got dressed for bed and heard a sharp knock at the front door. Nick never said anything about answering the door, but I was a little wary of opening the door at 3 a.m., Who is it? I called, staying a safe distance away from the door. We need to use your telephone, ma'am, came a little girl's voice. I swung open the door to see a little boy and girl, not even 12 yet. From the way they were dressed, I guess they might be Amish. But any sane parent, Amish or not, would never let their children go out past 9 p.m. I'm sorry, I don't have a phone, I lied. My sister needs to use your bathroom, the little boy said, almost pleading. Then I saw them, their eyes. Just black pits of darkness. No sclera, no iris, just pitch black. I just stared at them, feeling hypnotized. Then a car's horns off in the distance broke me from my trance, and I slammed the door, locked it, and ran upstairs, hid under my covers. The banging stopped around 5 a.m. That's when Nick, Mom, and Dad returned. Mom's maid costume was prim and perfect, just like her. On the other hand, Dad was all dirty and sweaty from dancing. His Dracula makeup was running because of his beads of sweat dripping down his face like a waterfall. Mom, Dad, Nick, you'll not believe what happened to me last night. There were two kids at the door at 3 a.m. and 3 in the morning. They had pitch black eyes. But as I assumed, they never believed me. What's your thoughts on the black-eyed children phenomenon?
I don't know. And yet so many people have claimed to see it. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, it's just like people who believe that they've seen shadows or shadow people. There's a lot of claims, and yet we don't necessarily know exactly where that claim comes from. Like, if there are children with black eyes or dark eyes, why is that? What is that tied into? Is there a meaning behind it? Did something happen to these children? And one of the features that they take on are black eyes. I don't know. I don't quite understand it, but well, you sure hear a lot of stories about it.
And they seem to all kind of have this insistence of getting into the house for one, almost an emergency reason or another. I need to use your phone. I need to use your bathroom. And they come across, you know, innocently as children. So they play on, you know, people's best instincts of I need to help this innocent person here.
Right.
Until you look at them and then it's like, oh my God. And I mean, I could see like some, you know, teenagers screwing with people getting black contacts and going out for the night and having some fun. But I don't think that that's what a lot of this is. I don't know what it is that is actually going on, though, either, because we don't really have any stories that I've heard of anyone letting the black eyed children in and then, you know, being around to share what happened next. It always just kind of ends with I slammed the door and ran away. So it's there's not a lot of conclusions to be made about what goes on with these things.
Right. And if it's an image in our own minds that we kind of create and it just kind of passes on from one story to another, that's one thing. I always wonder about like the connection. Let's say there's 100 instances of this over time. And I know it's much more than that. But is there a connection between these children with dark eyes and those children with dark eyes? What is that connection? What makes them have dark eyes and have this pleading need to get into the house?
That's the weird part, because a lot of it seems to make no sense at all. There's not a lot of connections made, like in so-and-so, it was like an omen and so-and-so died or this or that. It's just they're kind of there. It's not like the house is haunted. The people don't typically have a lot of other paranormal experiences going on. It's just weird.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's something too, but I don't know what exactly it is. It's a bizarre one. 855-853-4802, our phone number. Let's go to a caller. Hi, you are on the air.
Hey, good morning. This is Ivan from Philly calling once again. First off, I just wanted to say thank you for playing my story. I just heard it. I became an EPP member as of yesterday. So I heard you guys discuss it, and you were saying that maybe it was something that my mother had possibly conjured up. And I do believe that it has something to do with that. And like I said, we've been to places like Gettysburg Battlefield and numerous so-called haunted places. I have yet to personally see anything. But one thing that I do have an issue with is like at my workplaces, and sometimes at home it's happened, I feel like somebody's walking up on me. And it's enough for me to physically turn around and look. And when I do, then no one's there. I've been at my new job now for a couple of months. And it happened to me at least 10 times here, where I got the feeling that somebody was walking behind me, walking up on me. And when I turn around, there's nobody there. At my previous job, which was an old warehouse, I used to see, I'm not going to say apparitions. I'd say more like a shadow. But I didn't physically, like, actually see anything. It was just like I felt like I seen somebody run by or somebody, you know, went around the corner real quick. That kind of thing. I do believe that it has a lot to do with my mom being wrapped up with brujeria. Just simply because of the things she used to do. There were times when she used to sit there watching TV and we're all sitting in the living room. Next thing you know, she would just completely change and start speaking in a completely different voice. And she would tell us things. She told me that I was going to be in a car accident. I was in a car accident a few weeks after that. I told my brother that he was going to drown if he didn't watch himself. He almost drowned. If it hadn't been for a gentleman there with an inner tube, he would have drowned. She used to give my dad lottery numbers to play, and he would hit. And she had her room was filled up with statues. There was Buddhas in one section, there were Africans in another, Indians, and all kinds of things. She used to light cigars for them, give them liquor, wine, all sorts of things that she would do for them. And her and my aunt used to go back and forth. My aunt was more into the black magic thing, so they would go back and forth. And a couple of times, you know, things happened to me. I stepped in some white powder one time. As soon as I got in the house, my mom knew. They snatched me up, threw me in the bathtub. They cleansed me with some kind of oil and had some kind of scent. I don't know. I guess it was sage or something like that. I was kind of young back then, so I don't really remember exactly what they were doing. But I know that they did some type of ritual on me and... I can even tell you about the time when I got my head split open and we were on our way to the hospital, and the whole time I had my head on her lap, but she's telling my dad to follow the Indian on the horse. And my dad had no idea where the hospital was, but according to what my mom was saying, telling him to follow the Indian, and we got to the hospital. So, go figure. I've always had a thing for Indians. I wear a ring with an Indian's head on it, and I feel like it protects me. So I myself don't practice that kind of thing because, like I said, I believe that that's something that's you're dealing with evil spirits. But I do believe that something does follow me around. I don't know what it is, and I would like to find out eventually what it is, but my wife has even suggested that I go to, like... someone like her, like a medium or somebody like that, so that they can tell me. But, you know, it's kind of hard to find people that are authentic and real. So, you know, I don't know. Just some of the things that I've gone through. We're going back to Gettysburg at the end of February. We'll be staying at one of the hotels there in the center of town. We've been there numerous times already. Never seen anything. We thought we heard something one time, my son and I, when we were by the cannons. We thought we heard like a rebel yell. We looked throughout the field and we asked the people next to us. They said they didn't hear anything, so I don't know. But I've always been curious. I tell my wife, I said that I'm going to stop looking for ghosts when I actually see something that I don't like. So, you know, again, thank you for airing my story. And eventually down the road, I'll have more stories for you. Quite a few things that I've been through. So, again, thank you. And I think that your daughter is cute, Harper. She's funny, and I continue success for her. So again, thank you. And have a good day.
Do you think there's a trade-off when someone has an ability like that, like he was talking about his mother, where it's seeming like it was being used for good in terms of, you know, warning of this or that, hell, even playing the lottery? That could be viewed as negative, though, I guess, in some aspects, too, of almost kind of cheating at something to gain monetary wealth. But is there a trade-off that one is doing when you're communicating or getting information like that from something else, something on the other side, that, you know, you're getting these benefits, but in some way you're going to pay for them as well?
Well, I think whenever you have that communication, you have to open up a door. Mm-hmm. And when that door is open, sometimes maybe you can't necessarily control what's coming in and going out.
Mm-hmm.
And you may open the door to have that, you know, that innocent conversation with a loved one, or you might be out investigating or whatever. You kind of open up the door to see what's there. I think you just got to realize that when you do that, unless you really, really know what you're doing, you're opening the door to anything to come in and out. And there's stories left and right of people who have opened a portal, or they've kind of opened that form of communication. All of a sudden they've had attachments, other things have come through. So I think there's that side of it. And then I also think with his, what he's dealing with, like at work, when he's talking about feeling like something's coming up behind him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that throughout life, you're influenced by the people that you're with. Your parents teach you right from wrong. Hopefully you learn from teachers, you know, that's the everyday world. But when you have somebody in your life that is open to seeing and communicating and doing other things that maybe the typical normal person in the world today doesn't know much about, I think that influences your life down the line too. If your mother has abilities and has gifts, and let's say you shun that and walk away from it, I think it's still going to be part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Some way, shape, or form, I think that energy is still there.
When someone like that, like, because I've heard variations on stories where the mother is involved in some sort of practice of communicating with this or that, and seemingly it's with good intention, but again, the doors get open. Is it possible then for the person beyond just to open the door to almost to be, I don't want to say cursed, but followed, or the attachment to come in? And can that attachment then come to people within the household, not just the person who invited it in? And then you're almost, you know, it's like following generation to generation. And the current one who has it didn't even intend for it to happen to begin with. They're not the ones who opened the door, but it's out there now. And they, if they want to get rid of it, have to find a way to do so on their own.
Absolutely. Once that door's open, it can pretty much travel and do as it wants to. Again, it may always kind of be there. That energy may be existing, but when you open up that line of communication and you basically say, yes, I see you, I hear you, I know you're there, I think that opens things up for that energy, that entity, to do a lot of other things than what maybe you had intention to do.
Yeah. That's where it gets, like, you got to understand what you're doing when you're doing it. And with everything from playing with a Ouija board to ghost hunting. Because I think a lot of people get out there with things and they see something on TV and go, I'm going to go try that. And it's, yeah, it doesn't usually end all that well without having some knowledge as to what the potential outcomes could be. That's going to wrap up today's episode of the program. If you like it, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get all the extras, advanced episodes, ebook, audiobook, and more. Again, patreon.com/realghoststories or ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Todd and all of us, Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.